Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Drew Lynch is the hottest, or one of the hottest, stand-up comedians around, and he is a huge dog lover. In fact, for a time, on YouTube anyway, a dog, a French bulldog, was a part of his act. And he'll be with us in just a little bit. But first, as they say, Becky Mosser is the president of the National Association of Veterinary Technicians in America, a longtime friend of mine who does so much good for the veterinary profession. We'll talk about that and a nonprofit that she and others helped to begin. First of all, Becky, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I love getting to talk to you.
Well, the same here. And I love, as you know, talking about veterinary technicians. I mean, nurses. We have veterinarians on the show all the time, of course, and I'm very grateful. We have many of the leading veterinarians in the world, and we talk about all sorts of things regarding vet. But you can't have a discussion, I don't think, about veterinary medicine in the United States without including the technicians or nurses, because you are so much. I don't think the public really understands all of what you do, which I think, and I know I'm going to hear from, I'm so sorry I'm going down this road, but I know I'm going to hear from human nurses as a result. But the fact is that veterinary technicians and nurses can do more by training than what human nurses do. That's my statement, not yours, Becky, but explain what veterinary technicians do.
Well, I mean, thank you, first of all. You're such an amazing advocate, and it takes advocates for us to be uplifted, right? Our profession advances when we have opportunities like this to educate. So obviously, thank you for the work that you do to be inclusive of the veterinary technician and the whole team in the veterinary hospital. So, you know, I think it's, I would answer your question kind of with, like, what don't veterinary technicians do? We're trained in the front to back of the veterinary practice and really of medicine in general. You know, and I do think that veterinary technicians execute and practice on a regular basis a more wide array of medicine than a more wide array of medicine than human nurses, but I do think that they do get more training than we give them credit for. They just end up really specialized. And in veterinary medicine, we have this like amazing profession where we get to work with all the different species, and that's a huge difference, right? Is we're trained in large animals, small animal, exotics, you know, hoofstock, poultry medicine, just so many different species is part of our repertoire and our knowledge base. And then on top of that, we get to do things from dentistry to husbandry to behavior to radiology to ultrasonography to general practice. And we just simply have all of these areas of medicine where veterinary technicians are an essential part of the role in the whole team for best patient care. And they're incredibly dedicated, smart, hardworking, well-trained individuals.
And frankly, underpaid. And frankly, not utilized to the extent, in all cases, of what veterinary technicians are trained to do. So let's talk about some definitions first. What is a veterinary technician compared to a veterinary nurse compared to a veterinary assistant?
So that's that is kind of a lot. It's a lot to unpack in the sense that those definitions vary by state, and the role and the recognition of a veterinary technician and the differentiation between an assistant and a veterinary technician legally does vary by state. But in general, and from the AVMA, which I know you've talked about before, the highest level kind of veterinary organization that sort of creates a lot of the standards, as well as the National Association of Veterinary Technicians, defines a veterinary technician as somebody who has attended an AVMA accredited college and or gone through a different state approved process to receive the title. Generally, they will, well, in all cases, have to pass a national exam, and they have to maintain their credentials through registering with their state and completing the required continuing education, generally on a biannual basis. So much like human nurses, you know, they receive their education, they take an exam. Several of them take state jurisprudence exams. So as far as a veterinary nurse goes, this is a term that's starting to be recognized in the United States as synonymous with veterinary technician, meaning someone who has earned a credential and has been educated in veterinary technology. So it is commonly used in other countries, and in Canada, I believe there are some provinces that say veterinary nurse. I know Australia, they say veterinary nurse, so that is an internationally recognized term that's just sort of starting to take some traction in practice acts within the United States.
And there's a short...
veterinary assist.
Go ahead, Becky. I'm sorry.
That's okay. A veterinary assistant is somebody who plays a role in the veterinary clinic who has not gone to school and received or holds a credential. And so they play a different role in the veterinary hospital in terms of support within the staff.
Okay. And isn't necessarily credentialed and doesn't have the extensive education that a veterinary technician or nurse typically has. Is that more
That's
or less?
Right.
Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Now, Becky, you're in an elevator. Now, there's a shortage of veterinary technicians, nurses, credentialed in the profession, as there are many profession shortages at the moment. You have about a minute and a half, so it's a slow elevator. But you're in that elevator. Make the elevator pitch as to why someone should be, can be, a veterinary technician or nurse.
Oh, that's so easy. For me, it was a matter of I watched my veterinarians when I was deciding what role I wanted to play in the veterinary practice. I watched them doing a lot of writing, a lot of reading, a lot of computer work. And veterinary technicians get to do the hands-on. I crawl in the cages with the pets. I get to do placement of catheters and procedures that help to improve the quality of life of veterinary patients and all of the diverse animals that I get to work with. And I found that nursing care to be more of what appealed to me than the diagnostics and prognostics that veterinarians do.
What does it take to become a credentialed veterinarian? And well, it varies state to state to some extent. In general, what is the schooling like?
Well, when you ask what does it take, my immediate answer is superpowers, because that's what we have. But from an education standpoint, it's a 2-year associate degree is the most common. But we do have veterinary technologists, and these are folks that have gone the extra mile and received a bachelor's degree in veterinary technology. But you can take your national exams with an associate's degree.
And there are specialists, too, that even more schooling, but you can become a specialist and I don't know, dentistry or behavior or any internal medicine, all of surgery, all of these other things. Becky Mosser is here. She is the president of the National Association of Veterinary Technicians in America. I wonder what the average pay is. We'll find out when we come back on WGN. Drew Lynch is a very funny guy, stand-up comedian and a hot comedian at the moment, but a huge dog lover. And we will talk with Drew, who I know has an enormous fan base all over the country, and how he created YouTube videos and did a routine with his dog. Where did that idea come from? We'll talk to him in just a little bit. First of all, it is Becky Mosser. My pleasure to talk with Becky, always the president of the National Association of Veterinary Technicians in America. And we've been talking about, okay, how do you become a veterinary technician? Why do you want to be a veterinary technician? Well, for any profession, you want to know what it pays. So again, this does vary from region to region, state to state. So you do get paid more, I imagine, Becky, if you're in New York City compared to Armpit, Iowa, for cost of living reasons, if nothing else. But in general, what is the salary like?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It varies geographically. It also varies by the different areas of medicine. You know, you had mentioned previously, we have about 16 different specialties as veterinary technicians. So it's really dependent on education experience. But the median salary In 2023, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is $43,740. And again, that can vary greatly. I think a lot of technicians would be kind of surprised with that, and I would say that is definitely on the higher end. But what we are seeing is increased recognition and wages for technicians as a trend. And we're actually, as NAFTA, the National Association, working with the Veterinary Hospital Managers Association on salary surveys and getting more information to make sure that these are accurate and where the differences lie across the profession.
Mm-hmm. The other nice thing about this profession can be part-time work. So as I understand it, you can work depending on where you are and what that veterinary practice needs happen to be at the moment. But there are lots of opportunities nationwide, potentially, to work part-time or work flex hours, that kind of thing.
Sure. And that, you know, one area that that's really growing is in telehealth and telemedicine, as well as things like pet health insurance and other types of claim resource where veterinary technicians can use their expertise, but also work from home and do that more on a per diem or part-time schedule. There's also things like hotlines, pet poison control. There's also things like disaster response that all can kind of be fill-in-the-blank part-time positions for our technicians who really, one, need it financially, but two, love what they do so much they like to find different ways to do it.
What is the best thing about being a veterinary technician? You've been one of those for a while.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
What? What is the best thing for you about being a veterinary technician?
Oh, I lost you on the best thing part. And I was like, what was that part? The best thing about being a veterinary technician are the animals. Like, we will literally never deserve pets and animals. We just won't. They're just incredible beings who bring so much joy and so much change and so much happiness. I mean, literal chemical releases in your brain, throughout your body, because of the amazing beings that they are and the joy they bring to our lives and to their people's lives. You know, there's nothing like your dog when you come home and they're happy to see you. There's nothing like snuggling up and curling up with, you know, your pet, no matter what species it is. So the joy that they bring, being able to, you know, create longer lives and better bonds with clients and to keep pets healthy and happy for a long time brings me unending joy.
During the pandemic, individuals in just about every profession, I think, Becky, had problems, you know, because they couldn't go to work and all of that. And that includes the veterinary profession. And you said, I am going to step up, you and others said, I am going to, but you led the brigade and said, I am going to step up and do something about it. Tell me what you did.
Oh, gosh. You know, I was inspired to start an organization called the Veterinary Industry Giving Tree. And what we do is collect donations throughout the year. And then during the winter holidays, we make monetary contributions to nominees in order to make their holidays just a little bit brighter and a little bit easier and a little bit happier. Historically, the holiday season is really rough on veterinary medicine, and having a little bit of help and a little bit of being seen and acknowledged goes a long way with any member, I think, of any profession, but I'm proud to do it for mine.
And, you know, you have given me examples before. Give us some examples of some people you have assisted with this.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, this year we had twice as many nominations as we've had the last three giving years. This was our fourth. We had people who were affected by Hurricane Helene and the storms in Florida this year, and we did try to prioritize them. We had a recipient who really moved my heart this year. She had received a kidney donation and that rejected. And then she had to have a second kidney donation. And this was out of time, out of personal time off and PTO pay at work. So, you know, she's having to have these surgeries and recovery without getting paid. We've seen people send pictures of their grocery basket full of food and fruits and vegetables saying that, you know, their grocery bill prior to receiving our gift was you know, $11, and that they were able to buy a basket full of groceries because of what they received from us. And then, you know, on and on from there. It's really a difficult thing, but a beautiful thing to see the vulnerability. And then as we nominate ourselves or we nominate each other, as we see each other, there's just a lot of vulnerability there. But at the end of the day, it just proves how loving and caring our profession is. And they just keep going and show up to work every day to take care of pets and to help people take care of pets. And I want them to feel seen and taken care of themselves.
Well, and you've made that happen. The Veterinary Industry Giving Tree, it's a non-for-profit. What is the website for that if people are so inclined?
It's veterinarygivingtree.com.
Veterinarygivingtree.com. I happen to know how much you give always to not only the profession, but of yourself to everyone around you. And the thing is that you're a veterinary technician. And I would say veterinary technicians across the board have that in common, as well as being the primary communicators in veterinary medicine. I was talking earlier, Becky, with you about the difference between veterinary technicians and human nurses. One thing that human nurses never do is euthanasia. And to be involved in that and then to counsel family members, that's a difficult thing to do. And veterinary technicians and veterinarians do that every single day very often. You are terrific. You represent an amazing profession. And I thank you, Becky Mosser, for everything you do and what you're continuing to do.
Oh my gosh, I appreciate you so much highlighting veterinary technicians and everything that they do. I'm just sort of a face behind that, and there's so many amazing technicians out there that you're recognizing with this conversation. So thank you so much for that support, Steve. I love getting to talk to you, and I appreciate you so much.
Thank you, and we appreciate veterinary technicians. Thank you, Becky. This is kind of crazy. How to rate a cat. Dr. Matthew McGlasson is the author of this book, Rate Any Feline Friend, From Their Boopable Nose to Their Sweet Toe Beans. That's what it says on the book. Dr. McGlasson is a, what do you call him, an influencer, I believe is the proper term, on TikTok when he talks about cats. You know what, though? We'll have fun with Dr. McGlasson, but I also want to talk with him, and he does this on his page, too, about dispelling myths about cats. And while people in many cases misunderstand dogs, for example, cats, completely wrong. People have completely the wrong. They're aloof. They want nothing to do with us. That's just one example of a myth we will bust next week with Dr. Matthew McGlasson right here on WGN. He is one of the hottest comedians in America. His name is Drew Lynch. America's Got Talent is how it really all began, at least exposure to the American public. And then Drew, and we'll talk about this, went to YouTube. And I was just talking to Becky Mosser, president of the National Association of Veterinary Technicians in America. And for some reason, I thought, Drew, you had a French bulldog. Becky said, didn't he have a Vizsla? And I said, no, I think a French bulldog. So once again, Drew, this demonstrates that Becky is often right and I am often not as right. So because it is a Vizsla, right?
It is a Vizsla. And I don't even blame you for saying French bulldog. I think I give off French bulldog energy and maybe that's why.
You know,
I'm kind of cute, but not quite as cute, you know, and it's like I'm fancy, but I have no business being that. I'm a little tough and I've got hindquarters built like a Clydesdale. So I get it. I'm like a little baby. I'm like a little baby pit bull with taste.
So this is not true. So if we see in a television commercial a Clydesdale, I wouldn't think of you.
Well, okay. So I hide it well, but I didn't think we'd this early into the chat we'd get into talking about my thighs. Steve, but I honestly was glad that we brought them up because I'm just set. I don't know. I'm just wide set in my hips. I have birth rearing hips. I don't know why. And it's very, I don't know if it's just because I walk dogs so much. I don't know if it's because I don't know if it's my diet. I have no idea. And Chicago would, any food that Chicago has to offer would not have helped me or my hips or my legs. But I am not at all like stout. I'm stout like a Clydesdale, but I'm not like, oh man, this guy's so tall and a looming figure, you know.
I don't know what you just said, but I don't think I agree. because you're not, you're a thin guy. Anyway, let's talk about dogs. So you did go, I'm right about this, you made all these YouTube videos. The co-star or the straight man, quote unquote, in these videos was either you or your dog Stella. Tell me about, because Stella was literally a service dog for you. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So she and I, like, I didn't get to, I just was blessed with Stella. Stella was like, she was just, so many people say this about a dog in their life that they've had at one point. And for me, it was Stella in that she was just the best dog. I mean, she just had such a compassionate nature. And I got her when I was really, really young. I think I really, really, I was in my early 20s, and she was chosen for me. And this was right at the time that I had right after my injury, I had experienced, I had a traumatic brain injury when I was 20 years old, and I had a lot of health issues just after that. And Stella was someone who, like, she went with me everywhere, and this was right at the time that I was kind of starting to tour more in like 2014. She went with me on a lot of these shows, and so I was just like, if there's a way that she could, that she and I could create content together, because she's just such like the perfect straight man, she would just, it would be awesome. And she would just be able to, she's just so funny in her nuance and how subtle she is. And she's just, she's just got like an excellent, like, stoic sort of resting, judging energy. And it was just awesome to know that, like, that was our relationship. And so at around 2014, I think before I did America's Got Talent, I started a YouTube channel called Dog Vlog. And the concept was really easy, in that I would just kind of vlog right to the camera in an office chair, and in another office chair next to me, Stella would just sit and just kind of deadpan right at the camera. And in between things that I would be saying, she would have little captions that would just kind of go above her head. And so these videos obviously took forever to edit, but at the same time, like, still so special in a lot of the things that we got to do. And so that was kind of our relationship, and that was how it started. And then I got on America's Got Talent, and then people kind of found our backlog of videos. And then, I when I got done with America's Got Talent, I think I had like 80,000 subscribers, and then like a year later, I had like almost a million. So it was just people really connected, people from everywhere who are dog lovers really connected with our videos.
Yeah, because I mean, what you did is you, how do I say this? You gave the dog credit in a sense. So while you had fun with it, and while you presented what the dog might really be thinking in a fun way, you also demonstrated the difference this dog truly made in your life. One example, as I remember, is you would lay down when you felt anxious, because you did suffer anxiety, and I'll let you talk about it, but you would lay down on the ground, I think, say the word comfort, was it? And then Stella would just appear and comfort you. Do I recall correctly?
Yeah, it is. So this was right in the time in my life where I had changed careers, because I couldn't get hired anywhere almost to do anything, because my speech was so bad. Like, I had a very debilitating stutter, and it was something that I didn't grow up with. It was just something that happened because of a softball injury when I was 20 years old. So it was a thing that changed my trajectory of not just my personal life, but my professional infrastructure. Everything that was there got just thwarted. And so feeling like, you know, I don't have a place, but I like in society, and that I'm not listened to, and I'm overlooked or dismissed, or I'll never be able to make something of myself. Will this only be the thing that ever like defines me, and will it crush me? Will it be how I'm referred to or known as, or any of those things? And so I had so much anxiety. In fact, before I got Stella, I had to do things like I would pace the layout of my apartment complex. It had like a quad area, and I would pace there for just hours and hours and hours and hours because I had such bad panic attacks. Or I had to be near a bath, like warm water, because warm water would really calm me down. Or if I ever drove on the freeway, it would always have to be in the right lane, always knowing where the hospitals were.
Wow,
it was just bad. It was crippling, yeah. Crippling anxiety. And
that does sound crippling. And what I want to do here, because I do need to take a break, is when we come back. All right, you had crippling anxiety, clearly, and I presume also diagnosed by a professional. Does the dog, for you anyway, make a difference? We'll find out when we come back on WGN with Drew Lynch. Steve Dale back with you on WGN, Steve Dale's Pet World. And I'm talking with Drew Lynch. Drew Lynch is maybe the hottest comedian out there on the circuit now. And what helped get him going over his anxiety, a dog named Stella, a Vizsla. And that's where we left off. I mean, you were suffering after the injury, crippling. These are your words, crippling anxiety. Well, that's not good. Did you? At what point did you realize, okay, a dog may help me?
Well, I don't think that. So something that not a lot of people know is that it wasn't even just that she was able to facilitate some sort of sense of comfort, which it wasn't just that. Like, she was able to do that, and she was just like, knowing that I had that at any time was great. But something else that the dogs do that not a lot of people know is that most people who stutter, when they're talking to animals, talking to themselves or talking to animals, there's no issues at all. You don't have any issues in your fluency. And so I would just would just talk to her, and she just had such a, I don't even know how, like, dogs are just so spectacular in their way that they can just know you in a language without saying anything. And good thoughts or questions or concerns or things that were distressing or just kind of just whatever, just, you know, word vomit to just say things to her where it didn't feel like it was being judged. That's, you know, that was what was just so special about her. And also it didn't even extend to her relationship to just me. I mean, when I would do shows and we would travel for years and meet people afterwards, people, like, she would help other people too when they would come up and say hi. Like, you know, she just kind of had a way of knowing if someone in line had a family member that just passed away, or someone close to them that's going through something, or a dog that just passed away. And it's like my dog just, like, Stella just kind of knew that. And she was like the most anti-Vizsla in that she was just calm and stoic. And, you know, Vizsla's, I mean, a lot of things that goes into the thought of even having a service animal that you don't even get to, you don't even, you know, through a lot of these or organizations, you don't even get a say. And most animals who are service animals are not Vizsla's, and that's because their temperament doesn't fit. But hers, did, and in that way she was just so special. My wife and I talk about her all the time. We have another Vizsla now in Vermont, who lives with my my father-in-law, and she's like our little Cretan. She's way different than Stella is. She's like Stitch from Lilo and Stitch. She's like doing, like, you wake up in the middle of the night and she's doing like pull-ups on the door frame. She's just a psycho. So she's just very different. So we joke that, you know, Stella was our older sibling, and this new dog, also a Vizsla, is our little younger sibling.
Well, Vizslas are energetic dogs by nature. They're Hungarian hunting dogs. That's their ancestry. So this dog, I want to unpack some of what you said here. This dog was able, you were able to speak to the dog. Was it only Stella, or is it any dog that you talk to and you don't stutter?
Yeah, I didn't spend a ton of time talking to other people's dogs. you know, just calling up a friend and I'm just like, hey, put Bubba on the phone, you know? So, you know, like I didn't spend a ton of time, but it kind of just works that way with a lot of animals. There's just animals are just so compassionate and demure, and they just have so much understanding for you on a human level. And I think that definitely is not just exclusive to the relationship that I had with Stella, but Stella's and my relationship was almost like. There were times where I almost didn't even need to say anything to her, and without her understanding, she had silent commands. That was another thing that was really, really special about her, is that she was trained with silent commands as well. So she had hand gestures that she knew, you know, she knew based on any of these hand gestures too.
Yeah,
She could close the door, turn on the lights, hold doors. She could put laundry in the laundry basket, take it out, put it in the washer dryer. I mean, she knew how to hit crosswalk buttons on her own. Like, she was just
wow.
She was incredible. Yeah.
Wow, that is incredible. We only have a couple of minutes left here. I want to say I agree with you about retractable leashes. You do a whole bit on retractable leashes. Go to YouTube, and I'll post it, by the way, when I post this interview on my website, stevedale.tv. Tell me about how that came about. I feel they should be banned in the first place. What do you think?
Oh, it's so funny that you brought up that joke, because that joke doesn't even feel like it is actually just the way that I feel. They're just the worst. And I just know that, you know, if you have a dog that's on a leash, but the leash is, you know, seven car lengths ahead of you, you know, a football field length away, you know, that's insane. And it's an insane thing it's unreasonable to put that burden on anybody else that you happen to be walking next to or near in the neighborhood, just because it's also a hazard, you know, and it's not something that, like, I just knew one time there was a dog that started going up to Stella. It's a really, really, really tiny, tiny, tiny Chihuahua going up to this, running up with aggression towards Stella. And it's never controlled. You don't ever have the dog under control. And I remember the owner, like, pushed the button on one of these heavy artillery, retractable leashes. And the dog, like, zipped back. Like, it was like a tape measure that, like, zipped back. And I was just like, that's not even safe for the dog. And it's just like, I don't feel like I blame the dog, of course, but it's just, it's just so frustrating knowing that a lot of their behavior is kind of that, to just pull and go ahead, and they get into their body language gets into like search or hunt or be or seek or be aggressive. Like it's almost always a negative impact that happens when you come across a dog that arrives 3 minutes before the owner gets there because of how far back the freaking owner
and
is.
Impact is the right word, because sometimes the dog goes flying right back if it's a small dog. Yeah. You know what? You could watch the bit, and I hope you do, on YouTube, or check it out when we post this interview at WGNradio.com and also on my website, stevedale.tv. Always fun to talk to you, Drew Lynch. Thank you so much. And we will see you in Chicago soon, I hope. Well, we're talking about the good dogs can do. Don't fall down. Get a dog. A new study from Trinity College in Dublin suggests that older adults, meaning over 60 years old, that's what they say older adults are, I don't know, who regularly walk their dogs, show better balance and have fewer falls as a result. Now, what the study doesn't reveal is if it matters whether you're walking a Great Dane or a Chihuahua. It doesn't say big dogs or small dogs, one might be better than the other, but it does say you're going to walk faster and also have more confidence in the way you walk. And people who have more confidence are less likely to fall as well. And of course, falling is a great hazard. I'm not talking about when ice is around. I'm talking about it being a balance issue. I mean, you can break a hip that way, right? So the answer to all this, get a dog. It will prepare you for later in life. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.